Hey, folks, want to talk a little bit about our sponsor for the coaching staff. Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust, all American used cars and trucks. Had to bring my car in just last week, and Juan Carlos and everybody there took great care of me. They've got some great deals for you folks here, and you're going to want to listen carefully to this. If you're in the Omaha area and you need an oil change, you need to go to Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust, 4839 North 90th Street here in Omaha. If you go there on Wednesday, it's only $15 for the labor on your oil change. You need to mention a pen and a napkin, but it's only $15 on Wednesdays for the labor for your oil changes. If you need a new set of tires, go to Ruiz Auto. And it is, if you get a set of four tires, they'll take $75 off if you mention a pen and a napkin. And finally, all American used cars and trucks, 144th and I-80 there. If you say a pen and a napkin 2025, if you mention a pen and a napkin 2025, it is $300 off of any used car or truck out at all American used cars and trucks. So if you are in the need of an oil change, if you are in need of a new set of tires, if you are in the need of a nice new to you automobile, you need to go check out Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust. Again, 4839 North 90th Street here in Omaha, or All American Used Cars and Trucks, 144th and I-80 here in Omaha. Podcast, weekly coaching clinic you can carry around with you in your pocket. Welcome back to the coaching staff, episode number 123. It is a sunny Sunday afternoon, and we are here talking some hoops with my main man, Mr. Tony Devis. How are things in the Cedar Valley, my friend?
A little silly today. You know, we had, I think, 80s on Friday, and then this morning as we were heading out, looked at it, it was like 20-some degrees, but the wind chill felt like 8. We start tennis practice tomorrow. So hoping for some more of that Friday weather without the thunderstorms and all that good stuff. How are things in the Big O?
The same. We had some storms come through here. We had Boise State Tournament, just like, you know, you had it in Iowa this week. And so Thursday, I think it was, we had some storm. No, Friday. Friday we had storms roll through, but it's been really windy. But now we're kind of turning a corner, you know. And I got my grill back out on my deck. I think we're going to throw a couple of steaks on there for supper tonight. So I am feeling good, Tony. I am feeling good. We are also feeling good about episode number 123. Tony, I've got a ton of great athletes with the number 23, Devin Hester from the Windy City of Chicago. My childhood hero, Ryan Sandberg, number 23, the Hall of Famer, the greatest second baseman ever to play the game. Sorry, Joe Morgan fans. Did you see, I got the Sandberg autographed jersey a couple of weeks ago, Tony? I got to wait for payday here to buy the frame to put it in, but it's coming here. So, Marshawn Lynch, Bobby Bonilla, Kirk Gibson, anybody from our generation can do the Kirk Gibson after the home run off of Dennis Eckersley, Don Mattingly, and a little European football for you here, Tony, David Beckham, bend it like Beckham. Yes. And I've got five high level, surefire Hall of Famers that have worn the uniform number 23 in hoops. Tony, what do you got?
Start off with some cat named Mike Jordan.
Mike Jordan, yes. Or as Stuart Smalley said on Saturday Night Live, Michael J, to protect your anonymity. So, he was all right. He's, not a bad baller. So that's one.
Another cat, LeBron James.
LeBron James, that's another one, yeah. Three other guys, two of them still active.
23, still active in the NBA and high-level players. Let's see here. I mean, after you get those two, it's hard to remember the next three.
One is a former teammate of LeBron James. very recently former teammate of LeBron James.
Oh, man. Anthony Davis was not be 23, but he was a fairly recent teammate of LeBron James.
He wore 23.
Did he wear it?
Yeah. I think so. He was on the list. Okay. He was on the list, yeah. So, another guy that plays the same position as Anthony Davis, but he has 3 more championship rings than Anthony Davis.
Is Draymond 23?
Draymond is 23, yep.
Okay.
And a guy that used to play in Los Angeles, he had his best years as a player in Los Angeles. Could really jump. His above the rim game reminded me a lot of you, my friend.
Huh. Los Angeles. Big vertical. I'm drawing the blank on that one.
Mr. Blake Griffin. Mr. Blair, yeah, yeah, yeah. So, high-flying Blake Griffin. So, yeah, that's our 5. That's a pretty good lineup right there. If you put LeBron at the point guard-ish, point forward, Michael, little bit of redundancy with Draymond and Blake, but you know, you'd find a way to make it work. So, speaking of making it work, Tony, we got to make some shooters here, and we're moving into improvement season. You know, we're going to take some downtime here. We're going to give both ourselves and our players some time off as we come into the off season here. But as we will learn, and we continue to learn, there is no substitution for shooting. And the way that the game has evolved, you need to have great shooters, but those shooters have got to develop themselves, and that's what we're here to talk about today. And I know, I guess I'll lead with this, Tony. I know the more seasoned and experienced that I became as a coach, the more I worried about shots and getting shots up and making sure that we could shoot the basketball to the best of our ability, because you've got to be able to put the ball in the basket, and you've got to be able to have floor spacing. And if you don't have good shooters, that makes it very, very difficult.
Yeah, that's probably one of the biggest, I think, evolution in terms of my philosophy is the fact that, you know, don't get me wrong, I still love defense. I think that's a big part of being a successful team is being able to guard your yard, so to speak. But I really have gone to the point where I honestly believe that offense is what wins games now, the way the game has changed. And like you said, you know, those guys who can space the floor, if you don't have at least 2 shooters on the floor at all times, you are really going to compromise yourself from a spacing standpoint and those post-up opportunities. And I know the game's kind of gone away from that a little bit, as well as those driving opportunities with that, you know, the dribble drive motion type stuff.
Yeah.
You are really going to compromise your guys who can get to the rim if you cannot space the floor. I think one of the big things that you've seen with, like, one of the more popular teams in our state, the Iowa State men, when Momcilovic is out, their spacing is terrible. But when he's in, their spacing is really, really good. And they become, from what I would describe without him, as an average offensive team to definitely an above average offensive team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you have to, you have to have that ability to move it, to attack it. And we got into a debate on our roundtable state tournament pod. Would you rather have a great shooter and an average driver, or an average shooter and a great driver? And I'm not talking, like, you know, great shooter and not a driver, just like dead catch and shoot, like Sputnik, you know, just a satellite. What's the guy that plays for the Heat? Duncan Robinson. I'm not talking about that. I'm just saying, can put the ball on the floor, but is a great shooter, or just a great driver, but an okay shooter. And for me, I would always take a great shooter with an average driver, just because I think that you can just create more driving lanes for average drivers than because you've got that spacing with a multitude of shooters. And so you don't have to be a great driver if you've got a bunch of shooters on the floor. But for me, it's always easier to take away the driver and I'll give you that shot, especially like when you get into tournament time, the rim tends to get a little bit smaller, or you get down into the state tournament. I'm sure you see it in Iowa. We see it in Nebraska, where you get into the big arenas, whether that's Wells Fargo or Pinnacle Bank, and kids struggle to shoot sometimes in those situations because of the background, and they're not used to shooting in that arena setting. So that's kind of where I want those great shooters. I want those kids that you've got to come out on, and then those driving lanes will open up. So I'll pose that question to you, Tony. What would you rather have, the great shooter who's an average driver or the great driver and average shooter?
I think I would like the great shooter, average driver. And it goes back to a lot of the arguments that you made. And it's one of those things where, if you are a great driver, you can get teams, depending upon your spacing and positioning, all that stuff, they can get in that gap and they can really mess with your great driver. And if you are shooting, a not so great average percent from three, you can roll your dice on that, especially like you said, as you get to those big arenas with the open backgrounds, those average shooters become below average shooters. Mm-hmm. While if you are a great shooter and you're going to space it, that driver is really, really going to benefit it. And somebody who might otherwise be an average driver who plays with great shooters, I think they become above average, because two of the things are really, really hard to guard in the game of basketball. Number one is screens. Screens are hard to guard. And number two, keeping the ball in front of you, a live dribble, is really, really hard to guard.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. So, let's talk about shooters. Let's develop those shooters, Tony. And I've been blessed with some really good shooters over the years. Excuse me. I think the easy thing to say is, you just got to put in the time. But I can tell you this also, Tony. I put in a lot of time in the batting cage when I was a kid. And although my dreams of replacing Ryan Sandberg as second baseman of the Chicago Cubs were there, and the ethic was put in, but the good Lord did not bless me with the DNA necessary to do that. There is that thing where you've got to put in time. But other than putting in time and having those natural gifts, what are some I don't want to say shortcuts. That's not the right term. What are some teachable things that we can do with our kids that will help them develop into those great shooters? And that's kind of what we want to talk about here today. I think you start with that, Tony. For me, the number one thing on my list is, do they have that feel? Do they have that touch? Do they have it to become a great shooter? Again, you can develop players to go from bad to average, and maybe you could take a kid from average to good. But what do you do to take them to good to great, or to make them a great shooter, period? And I think that's a part of it. Do they have that eye-hand coordination? Do they have that depth perception that great shooters have to have? Do they have that feel for the different places that you're shooting and the ability to square, all of those different things? Just do they have the basic tools that you can take this lump of clay, so to speak, and mold them into becoming a great shooter? And sometimes you have that lump of clay that you just can't do anything with. You've got to have that ability to work it there. So I think that's where I would start at there, Tony, is do they have it? If that makes any sense to you at all.
Yeah, it definitely does. It's one of those things where, I think you can teach kids the right way to do it. I think it moves the needle some. I don't know, what my data and different things like that would be, but it is what you're talking about. Are you willing to get in there? I mean, I can sit here and I can read a book about how to fly an airplane, but until I get in the pilot seat and I put the plane in the air and do what it takes to be a pilot, I don't really know if I have much of a clue on it. Do I have the feel? Do I have, the ability to understand the art of it? And, so if I go back to the controllables, if you will, I go back to an acronym that beef, balance, eyes, elbow, follow through, all those types of things. And so I think you start there, because a lot of times when you watch a team warm up, how many players do you see go out by the 3-point line and just start casting it up?
Oh,
and the really good guys, like the Steph Currys and guys like that, they're 2-3 feet away and they're working on their form. And that goes back to that balance, those eyes, that elbow, that follow through. They're doing that. And then as time goes on and they start to get warm and they begin to incorporate other parts of their body and different things like that, and then they start to move out from the rim. And then next thing you know, if you're a great shooter from 2 or 3 feet and you just keep working to add that distance, next thing you know, you might be a great shooter like a Steph Curry, like a Caitlin Clark, like, the great ones that have played this thing from 22 to 23 feet.
Yeah. And I love what you say there, Tony, about kids just coming in and casting. I do every fall, I help out our kids' grade school with tryouts. And inevitably, there's always one class, and dare I say, it's usually boys, that come in and they start just jacking stuff all over the place and throwing it, and I don't mean to come down too hard on fifth or sixth grade boys or whatever, but I blow the whistle. I'm like, what are you doing? How are you developing here? In that way, this is not what LeBron does. This is not what Steph does. This, what you see on Saturday night on ABC, that is the culmination of thousands of hours of work that they have put in. Now, again, Steph has the feel because, he's just blessed genetically. A lot of that comes from his dad, et cetera, et cetera. Tony, that's like nails down a chalkboard for me, man. That is the absolute worst. I mean, I'm sure it's the same for you, right?
Yeah, it drives me nuts. And so, like, with coaching sophomore boys, that's one of the things that we talk a lot about is, like, when we start, because we usually start practice at 3 o'clock, some of the guys will get in there, be ready to go, and they'll have a handful of minutes before we start. And one of the things, if they're out there one of the first few shots jacking up threes, then that's when we start to have the talk about the importance of making sure you have good form, the importance of starting in. We get into our little talk about what a perfect is, and making sure that you get so many perfects in before you start to work your way out. And it's amazing those guys that have kind of bought into that, to watch their percentage go up and watch them go from being an average to an above average shooter. But, like we both have already kind of touched on already, if you truly want to be great at it, you have to be able to put aside the time, and there's going to be some sacrifices you're going to have to make. Maybe not going out with your buddies on a Saturday night, maybe not, doing whatever, as far as things go. You don't get me wrong, you still want to be a kid and stuff, but they've got to put in. Great players are made. They're not born. Now, don't get me wrong, genetics play a part in it, like we've already talked about, but you have to have that desire to be great. And then not only the desire behind it, but also the follow through to get in that gym and to get shots up.
Coaches, I am really excited to announce this year's lineup for our 5th annual Pen and a Napkin Coaches Clinic. This year's clinic date is Saturday, April the 12th. It's going to take place at Mary R. Queen Gymnasium, located at 3405 South 119th Street here in Omaha. We've got 3 on-court demonstrators. Andy King, the head boys basketball coach at Elkhorn North High School, will get the day started with his clinic on developing your team through 5-on-5 controlled scrimmages. Jody Steyer, my good friend from Iowa State University, the associate head coach at Iowa State with the women's basketball team, is going to talk about individual player development in small group settings. Jamie Smith, the head girls basketball coach at Solon High School in Iowa, one of the best I've ever seen, teach about shooting fundamentals, is going to talk to us about how to put together a great shooting workout for your players. Coach Smith won a state championship last year at the Class 3A level in Iowa. Those are 3 on-court demonstrators. Then we're going to have 3 off-court demonstrators. Our lunch keynote speaker is my guy Raz Vanderloo, the head boys basketball coach at Sioux City East High School. And also Raz is very involved with USA Basketball. I'm just going to let Raz cook. He's going to talk to us just with a basketball smorgasbord of topics about what Raz wants to talk about that day. Then we're going to have two smaller breakout sessions. Lucas Dollinghouse, the head boys basketball coach at Johnson Brock here in high school, highly successful program. He's also an administrator, and he's going to talk about coaching through an administrator's eyes along with some other things. Our other breakout session is Weekday Wade Coulter, the head girls basketball coach at Gretna East High School, and he's going to talk about building a pressure defensive system. One of the great things about the Pen and a Napkin Clinic is, in addition to our presenters, we also have two designated breakout sessions where you will get the opportunity to discuss various topics with other coaches attending the clinic. These sessions are a great way to pick the brains of your peers at the clinic, and it's one of the most enjoyable points of our annual clinic. And then, hey, after a long day of learning about hoops, it's time to kick back and relax. We're going to have an optional post-clinic social at Wine 121. It's right down the street from Mary R. Queen, about a mile, mile and a half down the road. I want to thank my friend TK, Tom Crable, for opening his doors to the clinic again. It's just $15 per coach for anybody that wants to join us there. Our Pen and a Napkin Clinic is one of the most affordable clinics in America. I mean, it is really, really, really affordable. You're going to get over 7 hours worth of information. That's $60 for a coach. If you're just a singular coach that wants to come up and check it out, it's $60 a coach. If you bring yourself and another coach from your staff, it's $110. Three coaches from your staff, $150. If you bring four or more coaches from your staff, it is only $45 per coach. We've got a sliding scale. It's all about getting better at an affordable price. So if you are interested in signing up for our Pen and a Napkin Clinic, look to the flyer on Twitter and mail it in. You can scan it in. You can do all those different things, or you can DM me or you on Twitter, or you can email me apenandanapkin@gmail.com. Registrations are due by Thursday, April the 10th, 2025. Coaches, do not miss out on one of the best coaching clinics in America. Tony, let's go back here just for a moment. You had talked about mechanics and beef, and you know that, again, very popular acronym, that type of a thing. You know, I know I have my key points. I'm just kind of curious. You know, what are some of when Billy is struggling with his shot? What are the two or three things that you might be looking at to help Billy? And let's just say it's just an average shooter, Tony. There's, you know, he's not pulling a Jamal Wilkes shooting it from behind his head. And if folks know who Jamal Wilkes is, thank you very much. But average shooter. What's if a kid's struggling with their shot? What are two or three things that you're looking at there that you're keeping your particular eye on in a general situation?
Yeah, I start with watching their feet. You know, if you're a right-handed shooter, you want your right foot to slightly be ahead of your left foot. Now, we're not going to get a ruler or anything out and measure, hey, that was, you know, 2.3 inches. We need 2.5 type of thing. But we'll watch the feet a little bit, make sure that the shooting foot's a little bit ahead, make sure that we're about shoulder width apart, that type of thing. And then I watch their hand placement. One of the things that we'll see sometimes is they'll thumb the ball, where on their shooting hand, they'll start to turn that thumb a little bit, and they'll give it a kind of a little bit of a side spin is what I describe it as, rather than back spin. And then the other thing I'll look at a little bit as well is that elbow. Is the elbow getting out, or is he getting in? Or if I'm behind him, is the foot, knee, elbow, and ball all in the straight line? So those are probably the three. I'll watch the feet, make sure shooting foot slightly ahead. We're about shoulder width apart. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll watch the hand placement. Are we thumbing it? Are we shooting with two hands? Then I'll look at that elbow to make sure that the foot, knee, elbow, and ball are all in a straight line from behind. But those are kind of my big three.
Okay. I have three big ones as well. And same with you. I would start with the feet, and the hips. You know, are you getting low enough? Second one, and I've kind of, you know, grown into this. Where is their release point? Where is their follow through? And you were kind of talking about the elbow, and that's kind of part of that. But are we getting that good lift here? I have to use my left hand because I'm doing this here in the office, because my right shoulder's messed up. I got to go see the doctor. you know, 10 seconds of medical information about me nobody needed to hear. But anyway, so I'm doing the Chris Mullen lefty follow through here. But where is that release point? And are we really snapping that hand off? Is something I really watch. And if we're really snapping that off, to me, that means you're going to get good backspin on your shot, which means it should be a softer shot coming off there. And not only that, but is as we're releasing that, are our fingers like all jumbled up together, or are we keeping our hand wide and we're snapping that wrist off? And what we always would say to our players is, hold your follow through till the ball hits the rim. It was a big one for us with that there. And then the third thing, and I really, especially coaching girls, are their shoulders forward? You know, how much better is your shot? And especially as a three-point shooter, and we were talking, you had mentioned something earlier about how post-play is not what it once was, so to speak. But people are still trying to get paint touches, right? And kind of the keys to the kingdom are get the ball in the paint, get two on the ball, and then kick it out and go to the one more. I mean, that is the, you know, one of the basic mantras of modern basketball. But when you're shooting that three-point shot, especially when we're dealing with younger people, most of them, if their shoulders are back, do they have the upper body strength to overcome having their shoulders back? More than likely, no. And so a big thing that we would preach and preach and preach, especially when I was at Fort Calhoun, get those shoulders forward, get that step in there, get yourself on balance, get a great follow through, and get those shoulders forward. And you're at least giving yourself a chance to knock down the shot consistently if all other things are being equal. So I was just kind of curious to kind of pick your brain on that, Tony, because those are the three things I looked at. And even though we're shooting the same shot, we kind of had like five different things, but we're both right at the same time. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean,
yeah. And I think that kind of goes back to what we talked about earlier. I mean, you want to show them how to do it. And as long as they promise that they're going to put in the time, you know, I've had some kids that I've seen through the years that have been really, really good shooters. And I had one, elbow was always out, but mm-hmm. she hit 8-9 threes a couple times in games. I'm not going to mess with that. As long as you promise that you're going to shoot and shoot and shoot, I think just the reps sometimes, I should say sometimes, all the time, outweigh, are they doing it 100% right?
Mm-hmm.
I just think if you can get rep and rep, one of the leading, I think she's second now, girl scorer in Iowa history was Deb Remerty. Uh-huh. And Deb didn't have what I would say would be classical form on her shot, but Deb was going to shoot it hours every day. Mm-hmm. You left Deb alone.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Is there such a thing, Tony, as repping the shot enough wrong that it makes it right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that trumps, in all honesty, I think that trumps proper form. Mm-hmm. If you're going to rep it and rep it and rep it, I think that trumps proper form, to mm-hmm. be honest with you.
Yeah. Agreed. So what else you got, buddy? I've got two or three more things here. What else you got?
Some other things that I think are big would be your footwork. You know, there's a variety of ways, obviously, to shoot. There's catch and shoot.
Mm-hmm.
There's shooting the three off the bounce. There's the one that seems to be kind of the in vogue thing the past handful of years, and that's the step back. There's coming off screens and shooting it. And so those are all important for your footwork. And so you've got to do those consistently, you know, where maybe you're simulating balls in the post, they kick out to the weak side, you're going to 1-2 step into it. Maybe you're simulating coming down off the bounce, all right, they go under the screen, you're going to go ahead and shoot it as they go under the screen. Mm-hmm. You're going to come off a double stagger at the top of the key, again, working on footwork. And so I think that's so very, very important, because if you go back and take a look at the measurables, the number one reason why people miss shots is due to poor footwork.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're going to be a great shooter, that's one of the very, very important places to start. But it is, in my opinion, the most important thing to rep.
Mm-hmm. I completely agree with you. I think with a lot of things, one of my favorite expressions is crawl, walk, run. And in that sense, kind of the Saban-esque process, quote unquote, By the way, he needs to get me on one of those Aflac commercials. But anyway, I'd be so scared. I wouldn't know what to do. Okay. Yeah, that went south in a hurry. You know, be a great catch and shooter first. But this was one of my three remaining things, Tony, being able to shoot off of movement and actions. And kind of like what you were saying, getting your footwork measured, being able to, like you were saying, coming off a double stagger or coming off a, you know, ball screen, whatever it may be. And what you do is, especially when you have them, now again, you can't control what they're doing at the playground or with their trainer or whatever it may be. But if you can get them, you know, moving, coming off your shots in your actions within your offense. Well, here's a shooting drill. Yeah, but is this shooting drill, is this part of our actions within our offense, or is it just a shooting drill? And I think the more shooting drills that you can use with players coming off of your actions that you're going to run in your offense, that's where you really need to emphasize that, so that when the kids get into the competitions, you know, let's go Tom Davis style, and we're coming off a down screen in the flex offense. Well, he's got to get used to coming, you know, basically from the baseline up to the elbow or the 3-point area and turning and catching and shooting from that angle on the floor and getting his body acquainted with that, his or her body acquainted with that, excuse me. So I really like what you're saying with that footwork piece of it, but then implementing that within the concepts of your offenses and making sure that you're doing that. You know, we only have so much time with the kids. And so the time that we do have, I feel it's really important to make those angles and the places that you're coming from part of your system as well, as much as you can. Sometimes you just do shooting drills just to do shooting drills, and I get that. Guilty as charged as well. But I was always really conscious of, we want to get a ton of shots up, but how much can we do this out of our quote unquote system and where we're going to get shots at within our system? So I really like that. Anything to add on that, Tony?
No, I think that's been one of the bigger game changers as a young coach. Like you're saying, you know, just shoot to shoot. I was very, very guilty of that. Then as I got a little bit more experience behind it, hey, can we do shooting drills that simulate what we're going to get out of our offense? And that just made a ton of sense. And so that's what I've tried to do more and more, is just to make sure that the majority of the shooting drills that we do are actions that we get out of our offense and shots that we're going to need to take in games.
Mm-hmm. Another thing to help develop shooters, and this becomes more and more of a emphasis for any athlete if you're going to be successful, is getting in that weight room and adding range to that shot. I mentioned earlier about getting your shoulders forward, getting that lift from your hips. Well, that's biomechanics. That is a strength issue. And getting into the weight room, making sure that you can do those things to the best of your ability. And again, the more you're in that weight room, maybe your shoulders aren't perfectly forward. But if they're not perfect, and they're not going to be perfectly forward for every shot that you get, but if you put that time into the weight room, you can get away with that a little bit more and a little bit more the stronger that you get, which helps develop your shot portfolio and your ability to make shots. And just as well as I do, Tony, and anybody listening to this knows this, the better shooter you are, the more attention you're going to have on you. So you've got to come up with ways to compensate for that. And I think for shooters, to be able to shoot, we've talked a lot about the reps that they're going to get in the gymnasium itself, but also those weight room reps are really important to expand their range. Okay, you're going to take away my shot at 19.9. Well, now I can move out to 22 feet and I can hit the shot. Okay, you're going to take away from 22. All right, now I'm going to shoot it for 25. And you watch somebody, again, this is an easy example to choose, Tony. You know, Caitlin Clark, her range continued to expand and continues to expand. And it's not like she's this big, strong, beefy woman, but you can tell she's just got great biomechanics and she puts the time into the weight room to get herself strong enough to get those that lift on her shots. So when you're explaining kids how you need to get into the weight room, that doesn't mean you got to come out looking like you're the Incredible Hulk. It's just you need to give yourself that base strength to expand that range.
Yeah, I think that was one of the things that was destroyed. I don't remember how many years ago. Is like, hey, you know, as a basketball player, I can't lift weights and get big and bulky because it'll affect my shot. Mm-hmm. And that was a myth that got you know, debunked a long time ago. And I 100% agree with that. You know, you want to, as you get more strength, it makes you more confident, and it doesn't just help you with like your basketball, it helps you with all of your sports. As far as, I mean, who wouldn't want to get stronger and faster? You know, plyometrics is one of those things that really separates. And one of the things that we've been very, very fortunate at Kennedy is we have one of, if not the best strength and conditioning coaches in the state of Iowa. Mm-hmm. And so our kids really, really have benefited from that in a variety of ways. And like you said, you know, if it takes everything in you to get the ball there from 19-9, people are going to get up into you. Mm-hmm. And you've got to be able to expand your range. And the further out you can go and shoot it, the closer they have to be and the better driver it's going to make you. And now, whether you're looking to get to the rim and get to the free throw line or shoot that pull up or distribute to a teammate, whatever, it's helped you develop your game and make you even more difficult to guard. But yes, the whole thing with core strength and the biomechanics and plyometrics and all that stuff, yes, that's something that's very, very important as far as the development of your game and being a great shooter.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely. So I've got one more thing left. What do you got, buddy?
Yeah, another one that I would go with is this. You know, if I told you I wanted to be an Olympic swimmer and all you saw me do was go in the shallow end to splash around, you would tell me I'm full of crap, and understandably so. If I told you I wanted to be a great shooter and all I'm doing is going out there and taking like horse shots or pig shots or whatever, you'd be like, what are you doing? Because you've got to get those game speed reps in. You want to practice how you play. And in some situations, maybe practice faster than you play so that when you get to the game becomes, it slows down for you. And so you need to make sure that you are simulating as many game-like conditions as you have. And so you want to take shots while you're having to go at full speed. You want to take shots while you are being guarded. And it might even be like you get past one person and another defender rotates to you. But those are things to kind of keep in mind as well, is the fact that you want game speed reps.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. It just can't be, well, I shot for an hour, but well, you only put up 150 shots, let's say, in an hour. That's not enough shots, you know, or 100 shots or whatever. And like you said, you're taking horse shots, you're doing this, that. It's got to be game speed. It's got to be intense. If you're shooting for an hour, you should just be drenched, don't you think, Tony? I mean, you know, just and get some joy. You know, tell your players this is the way you should feel, and it should feel good putting in a great workout like this. You know, give me 45 minutes to an hour of just busting your butt instead of just jacking around for 2 hours and just throwing some stuff up at the rim. It's you got to get after it, and you got to take your own legs out from you because it's going to happen in competitions, and that's got to be driven by the player themselves, right?
Yes. I mean, it's that intrinsic motivation where you want to be one of the greats. And so when you go in there, you're not there to mess around and, you know, watch TikTok videos on your phone in between whatever. You want to get after it and get better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I got my last thing, Tony, is we've talked a lot about repetition. One of the things that you can rep at anywhere at any time is mental reps, visualizing that shot going in. You know, we all remember, for example, the shot that Ray Allen hit that tied the game when he was with the Heat against the Spurs. But he had visualized that shot before. And you know, you visualize that shot going in, you visualize hearing the sound of that twine just, you know, going through, and just having that mental confidence that you're going to make shots and you feel like it's going in, and your brain is wired in that way and doing those mental exercises. Now, as Bill Parcells says, confidence comes from demonstrated ability. You have to you obviously have to put in the physical time, and like you talked about, getting those workouts in, getting that sweat dripping, all that other stuff. But I encourage your players to take a few minutes every day and just visualize ball going into the basket, you know, hitting the back of that rim, snapping that twine, and just, you know, enjoying that sound of you know, swishing that ball going through. I think that's another thing that great shooters have within themselves as well.
I mean, we've hear one of the big things in any sport now, whether it's football, baseball, basketball, whatever, is analytics. And I think another thing that helps separate good to great is the use of video analysis, you know, whether it's huddle or synergy or whatever, but players can get that. They can see that because, you know, we've said this before, tape doesn't lie. And the other thing is to use your shot charts, you know, to sit there and to track the data. I think that's another thing that's important too, because if you're going to get better at something, you got to stat it, you got to chart it, and know what you do really, really well. Mm-hmm. And play to your strengths. I think that's something that too many times, you know, well, you got to get this better, got to do this better. Okay, that's great, but what do you do really, really well, and make sure that you play to your strengths? But video analysis, shot charts, make sure that you're statting things, and that you are putting in the time and you're seeing that improvement happen because of it. Mm-hmm.
Coaches, are you looking for a way to improve not only your players, but your parents' perspectives on what they should expect when they come to your program at the high school level? Well, A Pen and a Napkin has something for you, your families, your players, your parents, and maybe even yourself as well. Varsity Preparation Academy, the first annual Varsity Preparation Academy, is going to take place May 3rd and 4th, 2025, here in Omaha, Nebraska, at Omaha Marion High School. That's at 7400 Military Avenue here in Omaha. This is for girls basketball players, grades 6 through 9, going into the 25-26 school year. VPA is all about educating parents and players to prepare themselves for the varsity sports experience, both on and off the floor. I'm taking all the things that I've learned in my career from all the camps that I've gone to, all the camps that I've worked, all the stuff that I've done on my own here, from USA Basketball to Snow Valley to Point Guard College to the stuff that I've done, and we're combining it all into one really, really intense weekend to help these future varsity athletes get ready for the varsity level. We're going to work on skill sessions on the floor. We're going to have many sessions on the floor talking about important things about the, you know, like why coaches substitute, the importance of routine, different things like that. And then we're going to have classroom sessions where we're going to sit down and talk about different things that are going to be important for the development of the player and the parent. We're also going to have a parent meeting to talk to parents about what to expect in the high school experience, what they should be looking for as their child goes through this. So coaches, pass this on to your players, to your parents. I think it's going to be a really, really good deal. It's $175 for the weekend. That's literally less than $10 an hour that they're going to pay to get this great experience, t-shirts, binders for note-taking, all sorts of different things. Meals are going to be provided. We are going to take care of your players and your parents. A Pen and a Napkin is going to be there to help you out. Always done that, and we're going to do this once again on a different wavelength, on a different level, with the first annual Varsity Preparation Academy, May 3rd and 4th, 2025, here in Omaha, Nebraska. Well, Tony, do you know who is always striving to make themselves even better than what they are right now? You know what Carla said to me the other day? She was reading a deal, the cheesiest songs of the 80s or something like that. And The Final Countdown apparently is the second cheesiest song of the 80s, Tony. I believe the phrase I used with her was, do not besmirch that song. It is an integral part of the Coaching Staff podcast. You want to guess what the, and I wasn't mad at her for saying it. Those that voted on that, no besmirchment necessary. Let me be clear. What do you know what the cheesiest song of the 80s was, according to this little deal?
Where is it?
We Built This City by Starship, which, now that deserves to be besmirched. That is a terrible, terrible song, but it lives on, as does trivia on the coaching staff. Tony, Gonzaga, men's basketball team, dominant team in the West Coast Conference. They won the conference tournament yet again. Here's the question, Tony. Since 1999, so I believe it is 25 or 26 conference tournaments, how many times has Gonzaga won the West Coast Conference tournament?
Let's go with 23.
You are too high.
Ooh. 21.
You are still too high.
19.
You are too low.
It was 20?
Is 20. Yes. 20th West. That's a crazy 20 conference championships in, 25, 26 years.
St. Mary's is good. It's not like they play the Sisters of the Poor in that thing. I mean, it's not as deep as obviously a Power Four, but they've had some teams that have stepped up and raised their game against them.
You know, we went to, earlier this season, we went up to Sioux Falls and watched Nebraska play St. Mary's. And they're good. They're really good. And yeah, I think that's just Mark Few. I mean, he is just so good at what he does, and just the way he coaches his teams, the way he recruits his teams, the way he gets those teams to fit what he does. In fact, I would say,
how about that?
But it's an amazing stat, and that's why I threw it out there, Tony. For the trivia question. So plus, I had to work Mel Allen in there as well. So, Tony, let's talk a little hoops here. Cleveland Cavaliers, second. This is another amazing statistic. Their second 15-game winning streak of the season. They've had two 15-game winning streaks within the same season. If you are not taking Cleveland as a serious championship contender, they're outscoring their opponents by an average of 11 points a game. They are really, really good, Tony. They are really good.
Yeah, I mean, in all honesty, I feel like you could take the Eastern Conference and get rid of the other 6-8 teams are going to make the playoffs or whatever. I just immediately moved to the Cleveland-Boston Eastern Conference final because this is a chance to be epic. And yeah, that I would almost just prefer that they did that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, in this streak, they beat the Pistons, who are rolling. The Timberwolves, who are playing much better. They blew out the Knicks by 37 points. They beat the Grizzlies twice. They beat the Celtics in Boston. Now, there's some Sisters of the Poor in here. They beat the Nets a couple of times. They beat the Bulls. The Heat, are not as good. They beat the Bucks in Milwaukee in this streak. I'm just going down this here. Now, of course, this afternoon, they got beat by Orlando. So, not the best, in that way, not the maybe the greatest timing ever. But again, it's just really, really impressive what they're doing. They're averaging 122 points a game, and yeah, they are just really, really good. And I think, people have said, well, Boston this, Boston that, and I get it, but at some point, you got to say, at some point, the regular season has to stand for something, and I just think, like you said, I think this could just be an epic 7-game series between these two, and I hope that they're just both healthy for that 7-game series, however it plays out there.
Yeah, that's probably my biggest thing why I said to jump to the Eastern Conference final right away, because in those first and second round games, you always run the risk of that. I mean, you take a look with Boston, they've been pretty cautious with their guys.
Yeah.
But it's a deep enough team that they, you know, don't have to have Porzingis for every single game to have a chance. You know, I know Drew Holiday's missed his fair share of games and stuff like that too. Mm-hmm. And Cleveland, knock on wood, has made some trades, picked up some different guys as we've gone along, yeah, and they've become a deeper team as well. I still think Boston in six, because if it goes back to Cleveland in game seven, who knows what's going to happen there.
Yeah.
But Cleveland is a definite threat. Cleveland could beat Boston. And that, I don't know if I would have said that before the season began.
Yeah. The addition of DeAndre Hunter could be one of those X factor additions there, you know, 6'7", 6'8", big wing. You know, they don't have to be as reliant on the Max Strus's and the Dean Wades to guard Jason Tatum or, you know, Jaylen Brown or any of that type of stuff. And, you know, Boston, you live by the three, you die by the three. And sometimes they die by the three. And so that can be a little concerning as well. So the great thing is, Tony, we get to see it play out, right, my friend?
That's going to be must-see TV.
Yep. Coaches, are you looking for a great sports story to read? Then look no further than Kings of Their Court, the story of three great high school basketball teams in the heartland of America, Millard North, Bellevue West, and Creighton Prep, all out of Omaha, Nebraska, all ranked in the top 25 in the country for the 2020-21 season in the middle of so much chaos that we all lived through. COVID quarantine, politics, racial issues, some of the best players that the city of Omaha has ever produced, and the stories of them, their parents, and their coaches all wrapped up into one here. All you need to do is go to Amazon.com, type in Kings of Their Court, and order yourself a copy today. Coaches, go check out Kings of Their Court. Tony, the great thing about March is we get to have these great games. You know, we're both coming off of state tournaments in our respective states. Some great finishes. I don't know if you saw over here in Nebraska, the 70-footer that won the quarterfinal game earlier this week. Kid hit a 70-foot shot at the buzzer. Like, literally, he got the ball out of his hand with 1/10 of a second left on the clock and to win the game. You know, that's the great things that people remember about March, but also March is a tough time for a lot of people because it is the real beginnings of the coaching carousel. And
yeah, and we've seen that, you know, pick up quite a bit here in the last week.
Yeah. And I know, you know, we have a lot of people that listen from our home states of Nebraska and Iowa. And in some people's eyes, it's a controversial move. In some others' people's eyes, they're saying that it was overdue. But let's start here with Fran McCaffrey. And Coach McCaffrey, after 15 years at Iowa, almost 300 wins at Iowa. I believe I saw he was the all-time wins leader at Iowa. Am I right with that, Tony?
You are correct.
You know, and again, there are people that really, really like him. There are people that really don't like him. You know, he took over a situation where Iowa basketball was not in a good place, perhaps maybe the worst place it's ever been. I know it's in the worst place it's ever been in my lifetime. And Fran rebuilt the program into not just respectable, but I think one year they were a 2 seed in the tournament. You know, so Tony, you're a lot closer. You're in Cedar Rapids. You're just a half hour or so north of Iowa City. I mean, what's the mood been like in the eastern part of the state?
You know, kind of like Fran himself, there's not a lot of middle ground. Mm-hmm. You know, you either love the move or you hate the move. If you go through and take a look at the good that Fran did, you've touched on the stuff. You know, he got him a 2 seed in the NCAA tournament. They won, I believe they won the Big Ten tournament under him as well. You know, he had a National Player of the Year with Luka Garza. He's had some guys that have been drafted in the NBA with the Murray Twins and Luka Garza and stuff like that. There have been some really good things, and he's done some great stuff off the court too. You know, just reading through some of the journalists that have talked about, they lost a parent. Fran was the one that called them and, you know, helped him through that difficult time. You know, obviously you take a look, his son Patrick battled cancer, and Fran's been really big in terms of fundraising for cancer and different things. And he's done some really, really good stuff. But, you know, you go through and you take a look, what were some of his downfalls? Well, number one, lack of success in the NCAA tournament. That's up there. But probably the biggest one right now would be the fact that I think they had less than 50% attendance at home games this year. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of apathy with the men's game while the women's is surging. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of the things you take a look at, will the new coach have to try to take some of those fans from the women's side and pull them back to the men's side? And I think unfortunately that'll probably be a part of it. There'll be a competition for those fans and different things like that. And then sometimes the treatment of officials, you probably saw in the Big Ten tournament, he got ejected in the game against Illinois. And mm-hmm. unfortunately that behavior at times kind of undone some of the good things that he did. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, Iowa has one of the lowest NIL budgets in the Big Ten, if not the lowest. It's going to have to go up quite a bit.
Yeah.
And when you're getting less than 50% fans coming to your games, I just think Beth Getz thought it was time to strike was now. And there's a lot of good coaches with Iowa ties, you know, whether it's Darren DeVries at West Virginia, whether it's Ben McCollum at Drake, you know, whether it's Steve Forbes at Wake Forest or Chris Jans at Mississippi State.
Yeah.
You know, and I would think they would mess up Marty. And I know this might make a lot of people in your neck of the woods mad. I would have a conversation with Greg McDermott. You know, I really would. He's from Cascade, Iowa. You know, there's some things there. And if you can get one of those guys, you know, probably more the DeVries, McCollum, and I'll even throw McDermott. I think that's a huge long shot. I think that's a huge long shot. But anyway, if you get one of those guys, that's a needle mover.
Yeah.
And if you strike out on all of them, you know, kind of like what they did with Dr. Tom, where they kind of unceremoniously pushed him out, and we got Stevie Alford, and then we got Todd Licklider, things can go downhill fast, and sometimes you don't know what you got until it's gone.
Do you think, here's my hypothesis, Tony, I'll ask you this question. Do you think it was Fran the coach or Fran the personality that led things to this point?
I think it's more personality. And the reason why I say that, if you watch his teams play offensively, they run really good stuff. They're usually one of the best offensive team in the country year in and year out.
Yep.
Now, don't get me wrong. The defense is usually about as bad as the offense is good. But I think it was more of the personality. And the crazy thing, Marty, if you took the time to get to know him,
yeah,
he's actually a really good guy.
I've heard this from numerous
people. Too many times people watch the interactions with officials. But you probably have seen a lot of the stuff on social media, X in particular, former players and current players just love him to death because he had their back. I mean, I still think at the time that Doug Gottlieb, when Fran was an assistant coach at Notre Dame, Doug Gottlieb's dad ripped him, and Fran was going to fight Doug Gottlieb's dad because he had Doug's back. And that's story after story of Fran McCaffrey, is he has his guy's back.
Yeah. I would say that, you know, I think the attendance figures had a lot to do with that. But I think a lot of fans got turned off by the antics with the officials and the lack of defense. I think those are the two big things, and I think what hurt them in March, so to speak, was that lack of defense, that lack of ability to get stops. I think that's what really I think they recruited really good players. You know, you got the Murray twins. Keegan was a number 4 pick altogether. The development of players and the skill development, never in doubt. But I think people, and I think, was some of that criticism justified? Absolutely, it was in the especially when the with the dealing with officials. Now, I think the other day when he got kicked out against Illinois, you know, 4 hours later, you're watching Dan Hurley just flip out and lose his ever loving mind, and nothing happens. And who knows what magic words Fran said on the technical that got him kicked out. But he was just literally staying there. And again, he could have just said one of the worst things that you, and he, you know, he's done this long enough. He knows what he can and cannot say to get him kicked out of a game. But, you know, I do think at times that there was that kind of double standard. But I also think that he kind of earned that double standard for himself as well. And so, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what direction the program goes in that regard, Tony. If you had to put some money on some things, what do you think where do you think the Hawkeyes are going to land?
I think it's either going to be DeVries or McCollum. It'll be interesting to see, because I think both of those hires would energize the fan base. And I've heard with McCollum, he's really good at structuring things around one or two really good players and then getting role guys around them to kind of star in their role, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So he would be able to maybe make a little bit better use of Iowa's limited NIL. Mm-hmm. But I've also heard with DeVries, obviously, there's the Tucker side of things where he bring his son with him. And he was able to piece together a really good roster at year one at West Virginia. So I think it's going to be one of those two. And I'll be honest with you, I think before you let Fran go, you've reached out to some of these already and have a pretty good idea on whether or not they're interested.
Yeah, I don't think at this level you make this move without having an idea of what you may have coming up here, or what you are able to get. And again, I think for those longtime Hawkeye fans, there's in Nebraska in football, you have the ghost of Frank Solich. I think in Iowa with men's basketball, and once upon a time, Iowa basketball was much bigger than Iowa football, and you and I both remember that, Tony. You have the ghosts of the Tom Davis dismissal, where there are just a lot of people that to this day, and again, Dr. Tom, maybe his stuff had kind of run a little bit stale. Maybe you didn't appreciate him nearly as much, and all the winning that he did. My dad always used to say, you know, if we could have George Raveling recruit and have Tom Davis coach, we would have just unbelievable teams every year at Iowa. Because Dr. Tom was a much like Fran, a really, really good fundamental coach and offensive development and creating an exciting style of basketball. But I really think those things are, and I kind of think back again, not to go too retrospective, but I remember as a kid, Tony, watching Carver Hawkeye just being packed to the gills in the Chris Street and the Roy Marble eras, and 15,500 was a given every home game. And now, you know, and again, things change. You know, not every game is on television like it is today. You don't have the streaming services and all that other stuff. But I really do think with the rise of the women's team, the comparisons to Fran's team made it look pretty, you know, pretty pedestrian, and I don't think that helped him either. But you're not going to have a once in a generation player come out of Iowa for the men's side very much as well either. So I in some ways that comparison is also unfair as well. You know, we'll see where Iowa women are at in 5 years, and hopefully they're still contending the way that they are today. But I think that hurt Fran as well.
Yeah, I would agree. You know, when you're being compared to that and you see, you know, Iowa women in the last two national championship games for the women, it's like, well, why can't we do that on the men's side of things? We can't even win a tournament game. It becomes really hard.
Mm-hmm. Tony, who's up for you this week, my friend?
Golden State Warriors, Marty. I believe they are 14-1 with Jimmy Butler.
Yep.
And they were, I'm trying to remember if they were on the outside of the play-in or if they were in the play-in when they picked them up. They are now in the top six and only two games behind the Lakers, who are leaking oil right now with no LeBron. And I don't think Luka has played somewhat recently as well. And so they could maybe find their way into a top five, perhaps even as high as a four seed. But yeah, I'm going to go with Golden State and the Jimmy Butler, Steph Curry, Draymond Green triumvirate.
Tony, I so agree with you on this, but I hate agreeing with you on this, because essentially now we get to reward Jimmy Butler for being a word that I can't use on this PG-13 podcast. But it describes a part of the backside of the human anatomy. How about that? For me, if I were a Miami Heat fan, I would just be like, you jerk. And that's what I hate that. I hate that about it. And it's turned out to be a good fit for now. And again, when you have Draymond and Jimmy Butler in the same locker room, it's going to be great until it's not great. They're wired very much the same way. I would say from the outside looking in, never had a conversation with either guy, so don't know them personally, but just from what we know. And yeah, I agree with you. I love the pick. I love the idea. It shouldn't be that way, if you will. The basketball purist in me says we're rewarding bad behavior, and I don't like that. Personally. But I completely understand where you're coming from. And you are right that they have been awesome. They have been absolutely awesome. So I'm going to go into the future here, Tony. We're recording this on Sunday, and we both have some things going on this evening here. So we were going to wait until after the brackets debuted, but we are unable to do that. So I am excited. I am up for all the Cinderellas that we are going to see this week. And I think it's going to be a crazy Thursday and Friday, Tony. And I do think, Tony, we have a chance to see more Cinderellas on the women's side than we have seen previously, because I just think there's more balance. There's more, what's the word I'm looking for here? Parity.
Parity?
Parity. Yep, there it is. Took two social studies teachers a few seconds to figure that out, but we got there. But the parity in the women's game, I think we got a chance to see that as well. So that's what I am up for, Tony. I don't have a specific team because I don't know who that's going to be, but I'm excited to watch it play out here over the next few days. I hope my selection makes sense to you, my friend.
It does. This is that time of the year where we get names like Bryce Drew and Valparaiso and, George Mason and
yep.
Jim Larrañaga. And yeah, I mean,
Florida Gulf Coast University.
Yeah. I mean, all kinds of things that become in that legend of this time of the year.
Yeah, absolutely. So who you down on, Tony?
New Jersey Nets. Just one of those things with them where they've traded away some really good players to try to, falter for flag, and
yep.
then just had to shut down their leading scorer with a hamstring. And I kind of wonder, to be honest with you, if it was a legit hamstring injury or
how bad is that hamstring? Yeah,
to continue to do that. The Jersey Nets are who I'm down on.
Yeah. As we discussed earlier, we had an extended conversation on Fran McCaffrey being letting go at Iowa. And again, that's kind of more of a regional thing for us here. But, obviously we have seen already some coaches move on or be asked to move on. One of the big ones for me personally, Mike Nabors at the University of Arkansas stepped away earlier this week. I've gotten the chance to know Coach just a little bit. He was on the podcast. Coach Nabors, one of the most influential coaches in kind of the social media era with all that. He was ahead of everything with his newsletters and his, just that type of thing. I think Coach Nabors will come back and coach somewhere else very soon. I think the Arkansas women's job is kind of similar to the Iowa men's job, where the resources maybe aren't there in the same way that they are at other places. But we've got Coach Nabors deciding to step away, some high profile moves on the men's side. Kyle Neptune at Villanova. Ben Johnson at Minnesota. And I thought Ben Johnson did a really good job, again, with the limited resources that he had there at Minnesota. Kevin Keats at North Carolina State. Last year, he was in the Final Four. This year, he gets fired. You know, so that's kind of what I'm down on. And again, Tony, you get into this profession, you know, it's part of the profession. Unfortunately, it starts to seep into the high school situations. And but I'm just down on that because there's such a huge ripple effect that people don't understand. It's easy for the keyboard warriors to talk about how Ben Johnson should be let go or Kyle Neptune should be let go. But not, you know, those guys are going to be fine. But it's the assistant coaches, it's the directors of basketball operations. You know, those people are going to have their lives turned upside down, and their families and their kids, and they're going to be moved out of schools and different things like that. And that just makes it really difficult. And that's, again, kind of what makes this time of year. It's exhilarating, but at the same time, it makes it tough.
Yeah.
One of, if not the biggest downside of coaching, is that it's real life, you know, and human beings that have feelings, human beings that have families, and it turns the world upside down. Mm-hmm. And it's a great business, but it also can be a really, really harsh business as well. And this time of the year brings back some really tough memories for those people. And so you feel for them in terms of what's going on.
Yep. Episode 123 in the books here, developing great three-point shooters. Tony, any parting words for those that are trying to develop those shooters?
Just like I said before, if I'm going to learn how to fly an airplane, I can read a book about it. But until I sit my rear end in the cockpit and fly the airplane, that's the big part. It's the same thing with shooting. You can read all you want about it, but until you get in that gym and put in the time and the sacrifice and the effort and the sweat, that's what separates good from great.
Yep. Agreed. Putting in getting those reps, whether they're reps in the gym, whether they're reps in the weight room to increase your range and your strength, the mental reps, you got to put in the time. And you got to go out and you got to do it. So great episode here with Tony, episode 123. Again, want to thank our sponsor, Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust, all American used cars and trucks. Appreciate Juan Carlos and everybody within his operations. Love what they do for the program. We love what you folks do. Get signed up for the Coaches Clinic on April the 12th. We got a great lineup. You know, take a little bit of downtime, but that's a great way to start your improvement season. It's coming over to Omaha on April the 12th from any direction that you're coming into, and getting your personal improvement season off to a bang here with just a really, really good coaches clinic that we have lined up for everybody. So, for Mr. Tony D. Biss, I'm Mark Buck. Coaches, as always, let's be sure to hone our craft one day.